What's trending?
What's trending here on Cody and Gold, brought to you by Baker University, where graduates earn higher salaries and land jobs faster than any other university in Kansas. Apply today at bakeru.edu. Number one on what's trending is that the Yankees have forced a Game 5 in the World Series. They avoided the sweep last night. They were able to get some offense to come alive for the first time in the series. Now the Dodgers had a bullpen game. They weren't pitching their best pitchers. They're obviously got some wiggle room in the series. The Yankees going with Gerrit Cole, though, tonight. Do or die situation. And heck, if they were to win a game tonight and force a Game 6, then you probably would see Gerrit Cole come back around in a potential Game
Most
7
likely.
As well, or however they're going to do it. But they survive for one more game. We'll get back into the controversy involving the two idiot fans that decided to try to rip the ball and glove off of Mookie Betts' hand that now has prompted Major League Baseball to ask the Yankees to ban those two fans from the game tonight, as they should.
Can't blame them. Next up on What's Trending, two exhibition games last night for the locals. KU and K-State both in action. Kansas won 84-53 over Washburn. Zeke Mayo had 16. David Coit had 19 for the Jayhawks. Kansas State winners 70-56 over Fort Hays State. Brendan Housen was their leading scorer with 15 points.
Exhibition hoops, man.
It's regular season around the corner.
It is.
Are they trying to remember? Is Kansas State ranked in the top 25 preseason?
No, remember we were joking about the receiving vote stuff.
That's right. They're like 31st or something.
Yeah, that's what we were joking about. Like, no, you're not ranked 31st. You're top 25, and then you're receiving votes. I think they were receiving some votes. Next up on What's Trending, the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office up in the Detroit area reviewing a warrant request for the arrest of Detroit Lions wide receiver Jameson Williams on a concealed weapon charge. This was reported by WXYZ TV. Great call letters, by the way.
Fantastic.
That's
never going to forget those.
That's great. We would never forget our ID or anything. We'd have it down forever.
If you're like, well, what exactly happened here? He was pulled over for a regular traffic stop. There were two concealed weapons in the car. One was registered to the passenger in the car, I think his brother, who has a concealed permit license in the state, so he was fine. The other one was registered to Jameson Williams, who does not have a concealed permit. So technically, he was carrying his gun illegally. It's not like a major criminal offense in that area, but it's also why, but they're investigating it because police officers said, yeah, you're good, go home, even though and in the stop, he apparently made it very clear he plays for the Detroit Lions. And so people started looking like, why didn't you stop this guy or arrest him? Like, well, we'll look into arresting him now.
Yeah, this happened a while ago. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like reporters in Detroit knew about this like a lot. But again, there was not they knew that this occurred. And now somebody has prompted him. I'll just say this. I have no idea what the outcome will be here. And yet, overall, I don't think this is actually that big of a deal. Jameson Williams,
he just keeps running into trouble.
Dude, you have found a way to constantly be in some sort of legal or other NFL rule issues, right? We know about the sports betting policy he violated
just
a year or so
PEDs
ago. He just got knocked for PEDs. Yeah,
it's only two games, so it wasn't a big one.
But just like, and now we're talking about, in this case, maybe he didn't, quote unquote, do something wrong. I don't know, but he's involved with an investigation with the police department now. It's just, you're way too busy, man, for a guy that's only been in the league for a couple years.
Someone says if it's not in the car, it's not concealed. According to the police officer, it was. It was like under a seat.
Who knows?
And I would just tell you that's state by state. Maybe in Missouri that's the case.
Yeah, I don't
know. Maybe in Kansas that's the case. I don't know. But obviously, based on the law, the way that they're saying it probably should have been. Either way, it's awkward. Next up on What's Trending, Will Venable has been named the next, or is expected to be named, the next White Sox manager, according to sources. The White Sox have not commented on the hiring, but Venable would become the 44th manager in their franchise history. 42-year-old, 10-year big leaguer. Starting to be some of the names you remember playing baseball.
Are we getting
bit,
old?
You know?
Is that what this is? Is that what's happening, or are teams just hiring more and more former players? I mean, that's usually who managers are former players. That's always been the case. But it's just, I think we're just getting
now
old,
now I know,
man.
The players.
We're just getting old. That's all it is. Like, yeah, now some of these guys are getting to your age and
I
stuff.
Think it's definitely part of it. We're in,
yeah. You know, it's not like I didn't know Clint Hurdle didn't play. I didn't watch him play.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, Matt Quatrero played. He's still, like, he's obviously older than us. Like, just different. Now, you know, Stephen Vogt and now Will Venable, and just keep, it's going to keep happening. J.J. Redick is coaching the Lakers, for crying out loud.
We're starting to see players' kids also getting to that point, you know, where they're, you know, I mean, Bronny, I guess, is an example, but Marvin Harrison Jr. playing
Sertan,
in the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, Pat Sertan. Yeah, we're at that point now.
His dad played for the Chiefs for a little bit.
Crazy.
Didn't he? Sertan played for the Chiefs for a little bit.
Did he?
I mean,
oh, at the very end of his career. Yeah.
Kalen.
Shedeur Sanders is going to be in the league.
A huge chunk of it was a Miami Dolphin, him and Madison. But.
There's a bunch of, we could have a whole, like, the most random players that at the end of their career happen to play for the Chiefs. I mean, Ty Law is another one.
Ty Law played for the Chiefs?
Yes, he did.
Wow.
Yes, he did. So did Kendrick Bell. Well, they gave him a nice contract. That was a disaster. So but Ty Law, yeah. Ty Law. That's what's trending.
Right at the end there.
Didn't he have the one pick? Didn't Ty Law have the one big pick?
Now the veterans who come here, it'll just be like, they're just kind of like, they're not the highlight of this day. They're just like here. Versus like all the other older veterans, is like Ty Law.
I mean, we're probably going to, whenever one day when DeAndre Hopkins gets inducted in the Hall of Fame, people are like, oh yeah, that one year, that one half a season he played for the Chiefs and helped them three-peat. Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
What a team does he go in with? The Texans, I would assume?
Has to.
Yeah. No other.
Although, I don't know, man. It ended weird.
That was a Bill O'Brien thing. I don't know if it was an ownership thing. I have no idea. And time heals all wounds, so who knows?
And the NFL, you get to choose versus Major League Baseball, they choose for you, which is the dumbest system. Yeah. Why don't I get to choose who I go in as? I did it. I did all of this. All this work was mine. It just seems like a weird system.
Yeah, I mean, Hopkins drafted there. You know, he still played, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 seasons
in Houston.
It just
ended weird. Okay. That's all, you know.
7 seasons and what?
3 in Carolina,
1, 2, 3,
Arizona?
5 were 1,000-yard seasons. Arizona.
3 in Arizona, right? Or is it 2?
3.
And then 2 in Tennessee?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, 1.5, I guess. In Tennessee, right?
It's not going down.
One and a half in Tennessee and a half season in Kansas City.
Well, let's say he signed another 1 year deal to this and he went 2 Super Bowls. Mm-hmm. Then, screw the other teams.
Someone says, don't forget about Joey Porter. That's true. Joey Porter Jr. is on the Steelers.
Mm-hmm. He's a good player.
He's part of their really,
Joey
really.
Porter.
Oh, you're
the original
that's a Cincinnati thing.
Oh, yeah.
There is one game in particular why I cannot stand Joey Porter. But yeah.
Did he do something dirty?
You guys had Vontaze Burfict on your team. You can't be complaining about dirty players.
Hang on. Not dirty. Vontaze Burfict deserved every ounce of that penalty that he committed.
I'll never forget Juju Smith-Schuster just lighting his ass up.
Yeah.
Anyway.
There's one player he deserved to get that penalty, but Joey Porter walked onto the field and was talking to the referee, and Pac-Man Jones was like, he should not be on the field, and touch the referee to make him turn around. He threw the flag. I was like, oh, this is great. This is going to save the season because they have to kick a 60-yard field goal. No, the penalty was on Pac-Man Jones for touching the referee, not Joey Porter for being on the field as an assistant coach.
Can't touch a ref. Can't touch a ref.
Now
we're just thinking of random dumb penalties. Like the one I just got the mental image of it again. I'll never forget Dwayne Rudd in the field goal in Cleveland, taking his helmet off, and the Chiefs won the game because that guy was a moron. There's a lot. That one I'm never gonna forget.
Like when you touch a football when you're not supposed to. Or lose it right before the goal line. I thought we were going to have to come in here on Monday and talk about Kyle Pitts losing one. I can't believe how close that was.
Since the Kyle Pitts conversation, I'll give him credit on this. The last 4 weeks, he's actually played some of his best football.
Yes.
Statistically, he's been some of his best games.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
He about blew it.
Well, Kirk Cousins is back to looking like Kirk Cousins. I'm not saying that the Falcons are this dominant team, but he's starting to look like that. Anyway, we could go on and on through the text line with some of the other dumb penalties and legendary players and everything. 913-586-7965. Matt Verderam, Sports Illustrated, going to join us here in 20 minutes. Get his perspective on where things are at with the Chiefs heading into this game against the Bucs. And also just the broader conversation that we kind of had yesterday in regards to the Ravens and where they're at. How much better did they get with Deontay Johnson? Because the offense was already pretty darn good. Their defense is the issue. So does he think there's another trade on the horizon for them or the Chiefs? That's coming up in a bit. But one thing has continued for an 8th straight game with the Chiefs.
Yeah, Mahomes has thrown a pick in 8 straight games. And while I want it, like, that's a lot, right? We can all admit that's a incredibly high number. For a guy who has had interceptions and certainly will throw a few from time to time, I think what's most concerning about this is Patrick Mahomes has thrown the least amount of deep balls at a quarterbacks who have started 7 or 8 games this year than any other. So, like, he's getting picked off, and it's not even coming with, well, you know, but I'm getting the ball down the field. I'm really forcing it down there, and, you know, sometimes you got to take risks. Scared money don't make money, right? And you're going to say, well, this is the position you land in. Last year and 2 years ago, when he ended up finishing with 12 interceptions, he started similarly hot in the interception category And notably, it cooled off to a point that was somewhat reasonable. If I asked you right now, his career high in interceptions last year was 14. Before that was 13 back in 2021, when he also threw 37 passing touchdowns. Do you think he finishes with more or less than 14, his career high? He has 9 right now and has thrown an interception in 8 consecutive games. Do you think more or less than 14?
I think more. I think he ends up with like 15 or 16 interceptions. But I also think the gap, the ratio is going to increase in a good way. There to me is still a stretch of games, specifically once Hopkins has the full access to the playbook, which hopefully is Monday night. I believe you'll start to see a stretch of games where Mahomes goes, all it takes, Cody, for the ratio to get balanced back out is Patrick Mahomes has 3 games in a row, and all of a sudden it's 3.
And doesn't throw a pick or only
7 touchdowns,
one
pick, 8 touchdowns, one pick. Like, I think that stretch of games is happening at some point. And I know you'll be like, how can you say that? We've seen multiple interception games. We've seen 8 straight picks. How can I say that? Because it's still Patrick Mahomes. And I don't suddenly think that he just doesn't see the football field well. I think he's made mistakes. Those picks, a lot of them are on him, no doubt. I think a lot of it is also on not trusting the offensive line. I think it's all contributed. Having DeAndre Hopkins in this wide receiver room is going to help them in a great way, and I think will help with some of these interception numbers. And so, I 8 touchdowns, 9 picks. No, I do not think the end of the season he's going to finish with more interceptions than touchdown passes.
This might be a good question to ask Nate Taylor or Matt Verderam, some people I know who do grind the tape or whatever, right? You and I don't do as much of that. As far as I'm not just sitting around being like,
I do not.
Let me dissect every single second. Again, if you want conversations on 3 technique,
different show.
It's someone.
Gold's got the NFL Plus premium sitting down in all 32.
I do not.
Sunday night.
Do not.
Let's talk about his rip move. I'm not doing that. No. This show's not for this. This is not the show. This sounds boring. When you look at what they've done, but this will be a good question. How is it that he's throwing more picks the closer they get to the line of scrimmage? That makes no sense. 2 years in a row, he's had a bigger pick problem than any other point of his career, and they are throwing for less yards per attempt than at any other point in his career by a pretty significant margin, by more than a yard at anywhere near his career low, anywhere near his career average. Why? Getting close to the line of scrimmage making this thing harder? Some of that I think is because we've seen 3 interceptions this year that were tipped at the line of scrimmage and picked off. So some of that is the linemen are like, screw it, I ain't getting to him. I'll just jump up, put my big mitts up there, and if I knock the ball down, cool. Which just brings me further to the point, which is all this cycle is the same thing. They have to, even if they don't trust the offensive line, either they have questions about it or they still have questions about their weapons, they have to try to force the ball downfield more. And I know it. I know every argument can be squashed by being like, they're 7-0. So yeah, let's just set that aside for a minute. Doesn't mean teams can't get better. I think they really need to work on getting the ball down the field by any means necessary. I don't care if you got to design certain things or add extra coverage or those things. DeAndre Hopkins and these other guys should make it easier to take those shots with Xavier Worthy. He's a limited wide receiver,
yeah.
But if he could get some of those deep passes, I think we're a different conversation.
Last year, there was a stretch of games from week 9 to, what was that, week 12, I guess it would be. The stretch I'm talking about that I think we're going to see at some point. I don't know if it starts this week or not, but I think there'll be that 3-game stretch where it's, yes, 7-1 or 8-2, in terms of touchdown interception. Last year, he played the Miami Dolphins. That was a Germany game, okay?
Yep.
In week 9, we all remember that. 2 touchdowns, no picks in that game. The next week, 2 touchdowns, 1 pick. The following week, 2 touchdowns, no picks. So he had 6 touchdowns and 1 interception during a 3-game stretch last year. That was probably his best stretch, other than he had 4 touchdowns, 1 interception against the Chargers. My point being is that we're going to see a stretch of 2 or 3 games very soon. And I think it's very soon because DeAndre Hopkins is part of the mix where he's going to have 6, 7, or 8 touchdowns to 1 or 2 picks. And suddenly that ratio is going to get balanced back out. Because I don't think any of us think that he's finishing anywhere near, let's say he finishes with 30. I don't know. You pick the number. What would you say last year he had? I don't think he's going to finish, let's say,
14.
32 touchdowns and 14 necessarily. But I also don't
he
think
only he had 27 touchdowns.
I also don't think he's finishing with 24 touchdowns and 23 picks. Okay. I would be absolutely shocked.
I'm going to guess that it's going to mirror very close to last year's season. He's about 30 yards short on the per average thing. 4,000 yards, 27 touchdowns, 14 picks. Yeah, that's what he finished with last year. I'm going to guess it's probably in that range.
29 and 16, 29 and 15, 30 and 18. If you
and
think
it'll be 3,900 yards based on the yardage he's thrown for right now. Because, again, that's dropped too.
It has.
But again, you and I also think he'll probably go through a stretch where he throws for more yards per game than that. These are setting to be like all-time career low stuff. Like, I mean, you know, career low in passing yardage, career low in touchdowns is 26, but he only played in 14 games that year. He missed two games because of the knee injury. I mean, it's like, and again, he could have had more than 4,100 yards last year had he played week 17. But if they keep winning at this rate,
we know the formula though. Here is basically, all right, you get through this, you hopefully they win 15 plus games, because I think that's in play this year.
And kinda has to be now.
Yeah, and if they do that, then come playoff time, if they cut back on the interceptions at all, like, I have no doubt in my mind Patrick Mahomes will be playing his best football in January, in February. We've seen way too much evidence. He will be playing his best football then. I don't care really what happens until then. Like, there, what does he play like in January? Last year, you mentioned the numbers, and then all of a sudden he wasn't throwing interceptions in the postseason. That's how they won those games. Offensive line play got better, yes, and he also wasn't turning the ball over. And that's why they rolled through Miami, and Buffalo, and Baltimore, and then ultimately in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, last year in the postseason, because it's funny, he, like, 14 is, I mean, that's his career high, right? That's a lot of interceptions for Patrick Mahomes in a season. And then if you just start going through, like, his postseason stuff, you're like, I mean, he was great. They just stopped turning it over. That's the craziest thing to me. There are a lot of things as a team I feel like you can turn the faucet on or off on, right? Where, yeah, we can ratchet it up, speed kicks up, all those things. Turnovers doesn't feel like it should be one of those things. Turnovers don't feel like the kind of thing you can just be like, oh, we don't turn it over anymore. You're like, what the hell were you doing the rest of that time? If you could just protect the football
but
like
that.
But that
goes back to,
if
you buy into, and I kind of do, if you buy into that, some of these picks are because of a lack of trust and down O-line performance
by
at left tackle.
By the time the regular season
so
gets there.
So if the offensive line elevates their game, I think you see Patrick Mahomes' numbers look better. I really believe that is a huge factor in where the interceptions are. He is, of course, to blame partially. Absolutely. But I think really the offensive line, and I'm really talking about the left tackle spot, I think that is a huge reason why we've seen the interceptions. Combination of trust and just also, you know, I think frustration sometimes leads itself in the next play. You referenced the one he had against the Raiders where, yes, his arm gets hit, but you felt like he held the ball too long.
Yeah,
I think, and I'm not disagreeing, but I also think if we go back and watch the play or two before, I think there was some frustration settling in there from him at that moment. And then you were,
because it keeps just getting backed up because of the penalties. Like, I'm going to make something happen.
Right.
And and that was the thing that led to almost.
And then look, well, I mean, compared to the rest of the quarterbacks, someone rightfully so points out on the text line, like, hey, Josh Allen only has one interception right now. He's playing great. He's the MVP favorite for a reason right now over at FanDuel. And the question for him will be the opposite, Cody. Can he do this in the postseason? Because Josh Allen's not making the dumb throws in the red zone like he has in the past. He's not forcing it. But I would still want to see, can he do that in the postseason? It's the flip. I know Mahomes can suddenly stop the turnovers in the postseason. I don't know if Allen can do that yet. If Josh Allen's playing like this in terms of not turning the ball over in January, there's a good chance they're in the AFC title game. Hopefully it's against Kansas City.
What's crazy is Josh Allen last year had 4,300 yards, so about the same amount as Patrick Mahomes, right? He actually threw for more yards total, but less yards per game because he had to play the final game of the season. Remember, to try to get the division, and Patrick Mahomes didn't. 29 touchdowns, only two more than Patrick Mahomes. 18 picks last year was Josh Allen. 18, 14, 15, the last 3 years for Josh Allen. This year's an anomaly. He has done an excellent job protecting the football. It's a career high in interception percentage. It leads the entire NFL in touchdown to interception percentage. What's crazy is, like, how the hell they lost two games? Josh Allen's playing like this, and they've lost two games?
I can tell you how they lost the Texans game. They had complete malpractice coaching at the end of that, how they managed.
Yeah.
That was the game in which they gave up the late touchdown. The game was tied or whatever it was, or field goal, I guess. And with 20-something seconds to go, they were just throwing the ball from their own five instead of just going to overtime. Way too aggressive. It left time for the Texans to go kick that long field goal and win, if I remember right.
Yeah, in a way, like, Bills fans are used to seeing what Mahomes is doing for Josh Allen, where he might have more touchdowns or whatever, but Josh Allen last year had a stretch where he was throwing a pick in a lot of games consecutively. I don't know how many it was, but you could almost bank on it being there, you could almost bank on there being an interception. I think at one point he was favored to throw a pick in every game. It was minus money.
I assume the numbers will increase for Josh Allen as the season gets going and into December and January when the games are that much more magnified. He feels like he has to put his team on the back more on his back more. I think we'll see that, but he's having a great year.
I think this year will be the first time, and this will be fun when we get to the playoffs. Last year, you and I went through the playoffs and we're like, every team the Chiefs played had more pressure on them to win the game than the Chiefs every single round. Ravens were at home, Bills were at home, Miami for their life. In the Super Bowl, the 49ers were a favorite and already lost one, hadn't won a Super Bowl since the 80s. This year, it'll be harder to make that comp because the Chiefs will be chasing three consecutive Super Bowls. It is going to be hard for me to imagine that we enter a single postseason game in which the other team has more pressure. Maybe the same. I'll listen to the same because Buffalo's never won one in their history. But, like, more? Kansas City is chasing immortality. And they've already kind of created that because 20 years from now, Gold, when teams discuss NFL dynasties, they will discuss Kansas City. They are a part of that pantheon for Steelers and Niners and Cowboys and Dolphins and the teams who have had true dynasties. They're in that camp already. But they're chasing ultimate
bragging rights. I mean, if you're a Chiefs fan, obviously you want them to win anyway because you root for your team. But just imagine if this team actually three-peats, then you may already be this where you don't care what any other fan base says to you as a Chiefs fan, and that's fine. But man, if you three-peat, it is so true. I mean, you really shouldn't care what anybody ever says again about you as a Chiefs fan. Okay. I'm talking 30 years from now when the Chiefs might stink. Who cares? Like if you have the three-peat,
it's like a lifetime worth of bragging.
It's a lifetime worth of absolutely bragging. Like Brady and you guys didn't do that. That's why it's incredible to win a Super Bowl anyway. But
he would already be at four.
If you got the third in a row, it truly is just a complete middle finger to everybody else.
Before 30?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Four before 30 is crazy.
And then Andy Reid, of course. I mean, then Andy Reid continues to have a chance to go out as the best coach of all time.
Actually, certainly think that would cement him.
You know?
I think I would just lock it up for Andy.
It's really interesting. Yeah.
Somebody brings up a question real quick. I think it's fair, but I know what your guys' answer is going to be and what Chiefs fans' answer will be. But if the Lions played the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, will the Lions have more of a need to win than the Chiefs?
They will feel like they don't know if they'll get back, and so there's urgency. Maybe. But if the Chiefs are literally a win away from three-peating,
it's still more pressure on them.
For you guys, I think
it's still more pressure on them.
Yeah.
I also think that'd be 70-30 Lions fans.
Yes, in New Orleans.
Yeah, I bet. From somebody who cheers for losers.
Bourbon Street would be way more Lions fans.
From somebody who cheers for losers, the Lions absolutely take it.
That's the most fun possible Super Bowl matchup from just an entertainment standpoint.
It would be fun. It would be a lot of fun. Chiefs defense against that offense, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be
pretty special. All right, let's get a national perspective on all of this. Matt Verderam from Sports Illustrated is going to join us. We'll ask him about this very same conversation. Plus, does he see another trade happening for Kansas City? Back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you here in 15 minutes or so. We'll get to the random question of the day. Let's go out to the hotline. Welcome in Matt Verderam from Sports Illustrated, NFL staff writer. Of course, also host of the Matt Verderam Show on Patreon, the football show as well. Matt, good to have you, man. I wanted to just start with something Cody and I were just talking about, which is Patrick Mahomes and his play and, you know, eight straight games with an interception. But we all saw this kind of last year, right? And then come playoff time, the turnovers were just eliminated. So how concerned, if any at all, are you with where his performance has been?
A little. I actually thought he played really, really well against the Raiders. Look, the interception wasn't his fault. He's backed up against the end line, and the right side of the line collapsed, and his arm gets hit. And, you know, there's nothing you could really do about it. I thought he really struggled against the Niners, although, as is his usual, he made a half dozen plays, and also you could argue won in the game.
Yep.
Look, I think long term, I'm not concerned at all about it. I mean, he's the kind of player who could go on a heater for 5 weeks where he throws 20 touchdowns and one pick. And at the end of the year, you sit there and look at the numbers and go, yeah, he's fine. It'll help that they're going to get Juju back here, you would imagine, relatively soon. They're going to get Hopkins more ingrained in the offense. So, yeah, I mean, I think he would tell you he'd love to play a little bit better. I think, though, two of the last three games he has played very well. I think the trend is going upward.
When you look at what he's done overall, like, you know, some of the stats just kind of support it. Man, I don't know that anybody would do better without their number one, number two wide receiver, and number one running back, and a very inexperienced left tackle and, you know, like a fine right tackle, at least in Juwan Taylor. I don't think I want to just ignore circumstances around it. I think that that's maybe what's been more surprising to me is we're not putting any context towards it. And yeah, he does still look like Mahomes in a lot of pivotal moments.
There's truth in that. And I think, look, I mean, he deserves criticism for the fact that he's got more interceptions than touchdown passes. He deserves that. And like, there are plenty of guys who would have the same situation and do better. I mean, that's got to be said. Now, at the same point, he's also been absolutely on fire in every game in the fourth quarter. He's just flat out won them the game. In the fourth quarter, when they've got to have it, he takes them right down the field to do whatever they need to do. And if you look at them offensively, in the last 2 weeks, their red zone offense has been excellent. They've been awesome. 7 of 9. They're number 2 in the league now on third down. They're over 50%. So if the interceptions stop, the rest of it's fine. Like, look, part of the reason his touchdown numbers are down is because they can actually run the football inside the 5-yard line for the first time in his career. Like, how many years has it been where they get first and goal at the 3 and they've got to throw it in on third and goal because they just can't run? And now they've got this running game. Look, I think the thing that nationally people just have not accepted about them, and I don't know why because it's been the truth for a year and a half, they're a defensive football team.
Correct.
They're a scheme team. And now they're a team that offensively, look, he stole their identity. They're going to run you over. Like, their identity, especially when Pacheco comes back, is going to be, we're going to hand off 30 times. You're not going to score. And Mahomes is going to break your back with 6 plays nobody else can make. And that's a lot like New England for 20 years with Brady and Belichick.
I think that is what stands out. If you go back through, like, individual statistical years for Tom Brady, there were Super Bowl caliber teams he played with where the stat line's going to finish exactly what Mahomes is. 28 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, 4,000 yards, and a bunch of wins, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. Like, the Chiefs started winning big and winning their first Super Bowl and getting their second with Tyreek Hill and explosives and getting the ball downfield and being a point-a-minute show. And I think, you know, first impressions matter in life. And their first impression is that's how they win and that's how they play. And so I don't think people have understood because, look, not everybody watches them every week, although God knows they're on TV enough that people have probably seen them most weeks. They're going to kick your teeth in. Like, that's how they play now. They're going to give up 20 points or fewer. They're going to give up less than 300 yards. They're going to harass your quarterback. They're going to cover everybody with press man coverage. And on offense, they're going to win on third down. Lately, at least, they're going to win in the red zone. We'll see if that continues. And if they do those things combined with their kicking game, they're going to win. They're going to, I mean, it's not like they're 7-0 and they've played nobody. They're 7-0 and they've played one of the hardest schedules in football. So I that is the one thing I think it is unfair to criticize them where people say, well, it's not as explosive as Detroit or it's not. Well, they haven't played Detroit's schedule. And I'm not saying, look, Detroit's excellent. Maybe if Detroit sees them in the Super Bowl, they beat them. But the Chiefs have earned every bit of their 7-0, and if you look at their point differential, they're right there with just about everybody.
We're talking to Matt Verderam here on Cody and Gold. Elsewhere in the AFC, we saw that the trade yesterday, Diontae Johnson, who at one point was a name people were bringing up here, we see Diontae Johnson get traded to the Ravens for very little compensation. What did you make of that trade? Because the Ravens have been really good on offense. Their issue is that defense, and yet they address the offense, at least for now.
Yeah, you know, look, I thought when the Bills traded for Amari Cooper, I was asked to write about it for SI, and I gave it an A+. I thought it was a great trade. When the Chiefs traded for Hopkins, I gave it an A. I think Hopkins is a half step below Cooper, but I think he's a meaningful, impactful player. And more importantly, he's the kind of guy in a playoff game that could go off for 130 and 2 touchdowns. The Diontae Johnson thing, look, I'm not going to get on Baltimore. He's a good player. And they got him for nothing. Although I think it does beg the question, why have two teams now in less than a year just given him up for virtually now? Like, why? What is the reasoning? In Pittsburgh, part of the reason was he basically just quit on the team about the fourth month of the season. But I don't love it for Baltimore for the reason you mentioned. They can't stop anybody. Like, if I'm Baltimore, I'm getting a pass rusher, I'm getting a corner. I'm calling up the Saints and making them say no 10 times about Marshawn Lattimore. Like, if I'm Baltimore, that's what I'm doing. And frankly, in the playoffs, they got to run the ball to it. They're not going to win the games against Buffalo and Kansas City because they're dropping back throwing 40 times. We've seen that movie. It doesn't work. So yeah, he's a good player. Yes, they got him for virtually nothing. Can't kill it. But I don't love it. By the way, a crazy stat about the Ravens. They're dead last in the NFL. They've given up 291 yards passing per game. The Chiefs have given up 295 yards total per game. I mean, just consider that when you think about Baltimore needing to make a move on defense.
I think this is also why, even though I think they're the most talented offense in the AFC, I don't view them as the biggest threat to the Chiefs. I think they've already eliminated themselves from the number one seed with that loss last week. They can't get it. Chiefs would have to go 8-1. Chiefs would have to go 6-4, and a million other things would have to happen. So they're going to have to go on the road to Kansas City to get through them, and they can't play any defense. The Texans, to me, are balanced. Once Nico Collins comes back, Will Anderson's a star. And I think the Bills are balanced. They're not as good on defense as they've been in years past, but they're not Baltimore either, right?
They're not. I would agree with you. Look, I don't overstate it. Baltimore is a team that you respect and everything else. I think if the Chiefs got them in the playoffs privately, they'd be like, that's fine. Because we're going to put eight guys in the box, and you're not going to run, and we're going to spread you out, and we're going to throw all over the place, and there's nothing you're doing about it. Houston, very quietly, at least on a national level, locally it's been talked about quite a bit. The one thing with Houston that is a major problem, they can't block anybody. Okay. If you watch Houston, it is a free-for-all into the pocket. The Packers hit Stroud relentlessly. He didn't throw for 100 yards in that game. The Colts hit him relentlessly. The Colts are one of the worst defenses in football. If Richardson had played even halfway decent that game, they would have won. That is a major, major issue for Houston, to the point that if I'm seeing them in a playoff game, whether I'm the Chiefs, the Bills, the Ravens, whoever, I am bringing relentless pressure and trying to take Collins out of the game and say, beat me. Any other way, do it. The Bills, to me, are probably the biggest threat, but it comes with the caveat of the Chiefs have seen them three out of the four last postseasons. And what's happened? They carve them up. They score a million points against McDermott's defense every time they see him. Like, right now, while I have respect for all those three teams, the Chiefs are the best team in the AFC. If they don't beat themselves, they have a very, very good chance of winning and going back to the Super Bowl at the current rate.
It's very early still in the year, but if you just take a peek at the potential playoff picture, we know there's two other AFC West teams, a grouping of AFC West teams that would also be in the postseason. Then the Colts are sitting at 500. They make the big change today, and it doesn't sound like it's a short-term thing. It's Joe Flacco the rest of the way. Colts are currently the 8 seed. With the Flacco move, the Colts making the playoffs now?
Yeah, I think they will. Now, their schedule is really hard. I don't have it right in front of me. Their next four games are something like Minnesota, Buffalo, the Jets, and the Lions.
Woo!
Like, not easy. Although the Jets seem to be the easiest team to beat in the world right now, so maybe maybe somewhat easier.
Yeah.
If they can get through that, the rest of their schedule is very, very light. And I think they will get through it. I think they'll be a 9-8, 10-7 team with Flacco. I think they do make the playoffs. Look, I think Denver here is in for a rough second half. Like, Denver's 5-3, and I give them a lot of credit for that. You look at the back half of that schedule, Kansas City twice, at the Chargers. They got the Falcons at home, at Baltimore, at Cincinnati. Like, that's a big ask of that offense to have to go out there and just, like this week against Baltimore. Yeah, Baltimore can't stop anybody from throwing the ball. Is Bo Nix throwing for 400 yards in this game? Because if he's not, they got a problem. They're not going to win any other way. I think the Chargers, the Colts make the playoffs, and then you get into, okay, does Denver hold on? Do they surprise? Does Cincinnati finally wake up? I think Pittsburgh's probably the team, although Pittsburgh, Mike, you want to talk about a tough schedule. Go look at their schedule the rest of the way. But I think Pittsburgh probably gets there based on the fact they're already 6-2.
I've already decided, like, even though I think Andy Reid never gets the proper credit, if Pittsburgh makes the postseason, I've never seen a team actually change quarterbacks that was working, and him being right, he was flexing on people essentially in his press conference. He's like, guess that's what I'm paid for, and then doing a little hop skip off the podium. I've been incredibly impressed with the job Tomlin's done this year.
I never understand every year when the Steelers are like 5-5 with Kenny Pickett, and you get some guy locally who writes in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, like, well, they got to move on from Tomlin. Do you know how many teams would immediately fire their head coach to hire Mike Tomlin?
Except for the Chiefs.
I mean, 28 of them? Like, how many teams? I mean, could you imagine the free-for-all that if the Steelers were like, yeah, we're done with Mike Tomlin? He, to me, is a Hall of Fame coach. He's gotten them to the playoffs. He's done so much with nothing. They have no offense. Even this year, like, their running game's not great. Their line's beat up. George Pickens is the only weapon they have. And George Pickens, it's like week to week whether or not they play him a lot because it depends on his motivation level. They've got Russ looking like Seattle Russ, throwing moon balls left and right. Like, listen, their schedule's about to get a lot harder. I think they're going to have some bumps in the road. That being said, what Tomlin does with them year in and year out is nothing short of amazing.
Do you think, last one, Matt, you think the Chiefs make another trade before the deadline next week?
I think, from talking to people around the league, that they are going to still be active in terms of at least I don't know that they end up coming to terms on another deal. I don't think that they've put the phone down yet. And I think if they make another move, stands to reason, you're probably looking at corner. The question is there a corner out there that makes sense in terms of both, is he good enough and is the contract right? That's the real question, I think, for Kansas City. But, yeah, I think they're still listening at this point.
Matt Verderam, appreciate the time as always, man. And we'll check in, I'm sure, in a couple weeks.
Sounds good. Take care, guys.
There you go. Matt Verderam from Sports Illustrated, NFL staff writer. Also, he's got the Matt Verderam show on his Patreon page. You can check that out. National perspective, but always hones in on the Chiefs really well. And we appreciate his time.
He's from New York. Should we have asked him about the Mookie Betts thing last night?
Could have. He's in Chicago now, but is he a Yankees fan?
I don't know if he's a Yankees guy because he grew up a Chiefs fan.
Yeah.
So maybe he just chose his fandom randomly? Maybe he is a Yankees fan. I don't know.
Yeah. Last night.
I'd like Matt 1% less. Great guy, but I'd like him 1% less if he was a Yankees fan.
Look, Freddie Freeman continues to be just playing out of his mind. 5 straight games going back to last World Series that he was in as well with a home run. I mean, it's a dominant tear. Like, truly, there is no reason to pitch to him. What are you doing? You have to stop pitching to him if you're the Yankees. You have to. Like, after he hits the one on Friday, which was insane, you're like, oh, he won't do that again. He hits another. Oh, no, he won't do that in game 4. No, he's doing it every game. He's done it for 5 straight. You cannot pitch to him tonight. I hope the Yankees do, but you cannot pitch to him tonight. We know there's game 5 this evening. Gerrit Cole on the mound. The Yankees trying to get this thing to 3-2 and get back to L.A. So Freddie Freeman's been insane, but the big story continues to be around the two fans, the two knuckleheads there in right field that tried to rip the ball and glove off of Mookie Betts.
And then just said, we D up when being asked about why they do that.
Major League Baseball, not letting them back at this stadium tonight, which is a good decision.
Did you see Gronk say that they were college friends?
He was on with Kay Adams, and said,
of course.
That adds to the exact same, you want to call it stereotype, I don't know, but screw, you know, Yankees fans, East Coast sports fans, but the fact that they also were friends with Gronk, it explains a lot, too, with the way they were dressed and everything. It really explains it all. The guy's wearing sunglasses, and it's 8 o'clock at night in New York City. Okay.
I'll be honest.
There's a lot of people who do that.
That guy's got real, wears an elbow pad and like full matching fit, including the socks, slow pitch softball guy. That's his energy.
He's
like,
all in.
Relax, pal. You're not going pro in your slow pitch league anytime soon. Not sure why you had your name engraved on the bat you're swinging with, but I guess kudos to you.
We're seeds all in the back pocket.
And he's playing in the D-level game, even though he's been doing this thing for 5 years. Like, I'm just getting reps, bro. Just got to get some practice. And you're like, relax a little, okay?
I just hated it.
Stop taking this so seriously.
I just hated, though, like, Yankees fans were proud of those two idiots. They're like, they're showing more effort than our team. And they're high-fiving and hugging the idiots on the walk out of the concourse. That scenario that played out last night is exact. You ask me all the time, why do I hate Yankees fans and that type of fan in particular?
What's that?
That whole scenario and how they all reacted to it is exactly why.
Yeah, they're the worst.
Random question.
And I guess it's 6 straight. I'm sorry for Freddie Freeman.
No problem. For you, Gold. For you, Drew, over on the text line, 913-586-7965. You can also follow us on YouTube, TheFan965, Twitter, Twitch, wherever. We live stream the show for 4 hours every day. I had a question, but I'm going to change it up. Because about an hour ago, Top sent out a video of Bobby Wood Jr. It was actually of MJ Melendez showing off his invitation to Bobby Wood Jr.'s wedding to be a groomsman. Mm-hmm. So the question I have for you today is, what is the best way for someone to invite you to be their groomsman? Bobby Wood Jr. sent them customized baseball cards that were graded by PSA that on the back of them said, couldn't think of a better way to invite you to the wedding. Consider this my invitation to be a groomsman, with little information about each player that went there. pretty dope way to
do it. Badass. He has a great relationship, obviously, with you know, Tops and everything to make that happen. Something that you and I couldn't just pull off. But that is, those are badass, by the way. I'm looking at the video right now.
Those are sweet, right?
Oh, it's,
what's the best way you've ever been invited to either be a groomsman or be invited to a wedding? I'll also accept groomsmen's gifts in this case. I'm just looking for, because you've got a wedding in a couple of weeks for your sister.
Yep.
And so, like, we're all around this.
That one's a, there was no special invite really needed on that one.
He just sent you a text? What was the deal?
No, it was in person. He just asked me in person. Yeah, I mean, that
nothing cool? No baseball card with your name on it?
There was nothing special now, but I didn't expect, I mean, I don't need that. It's my future brother-in-law. It's pretty obvious I was going to be a groomsman in the wedding, you know, for the most part.
Because, like, I don't feel like that should be a hard set rule.
Unless you have seven brothers or something, then I think it's pretty messed up if you would not have had your future brother-in-law as a groomsman.
What
if it's your like especially if you're marrying the person's twin sister. But anyway,
the twin part is different, because I was gonna say, yeah, I'm not expecting, like, if my sister, she's dating somebody right now, if she were to get married, that my brother and I were both groomsmen of her, of what my future brother-in-law would be.
It depends on how many groomsmen too, right?
I mean, I was not a groomsman for any of my sister's weddings.
Not one.
I don't know if I would expect it. No.
Interesting.
Nope.
Okay.
Don't think so. Not that I can think of. I was a, you know, I think I was an usher for my sister or something.
Yeah.
I wasn't an usher. Usher's a job you can hand over to the brother-in-law depending on the relationship. 100% of the time, no questions asked. Groomsmen? I got to be honest. I feel like that should be your friends.
It's just a different philosophy.
You know, that could be, yeah, and we grew up in different parts of town. It could be a culture. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, that was not our philosophy growing up.
It depends on your relationship. Depends on relationship, a lot of factors, family connection, etc.
I simply asked friends of mine for my wedding. That was
I'm not saying only to have family. People have, like, trust me, there's friends.
I'm just saying for Cody's question. I've never been a groomsman for somebody else's wedding. I have friends that still have yet to get married who I think I might. Could potentially be a groomsman for it. Would make some sense, I guess, in a way. But my brother hasn't gotten married yet. I would assume that I would be a groomsman for my brother's wedding.
Yeah, for your siblings. I'm just saying, like, for the other side, it wasn't always treated that way in my family, anyway. So I guess I don't, like, take offense if it went the other way.
I was just answering your question.
Yeah, someone said they got a really nice bottle of booze with just like a necktie invitation, you know, like a tie invitation.
Another wedding was everybody had gone to KU or whatever, so everybody, all the groomsmen got a custom KU basketball jersey, which was actually
you still got it?
Yeah, it was a size too big, so I've never worn it.
Dang.
I think it's still too big. I've gotten bigger. I don't know. We'll see.
You should try it on.
That was
just sitting in there, man. Next time you go to, you know, imagine you'll make it to one game at Allen Fieldhouse this year.
Yeah.
Someone says a lot of times, like, the groomsmen gift, they say they don't do that kind of thing.
The gifts?
Yeah. The invitation.
Why
can't you do something fun for the invitation, you know?
Yeah, everybody's going to be different on a lot of this stuff. That's the one thing with weddings. There's, like, everybody's traditions, et cetera, are so different.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about, like, no one I was ever around, like, it's not that you couldn't be, but, like, it wasn't, like, a forced obligation, if that makes sense. You're making it sound like it would have been, not forced obligation. I don't know how to put it. But you're saying you would have been offended if you weren't invited.
Those were not words that were ever uttered.
Okay, that's what I thought. That's what I thought your energy was towards it. No. Maybe you called it weird. I don't remember what phrase you used, but.
Yeah, it wasn't, definitely wasn't forced, but yeah.
Someone says I gave every groomsman a $100 bill.
There you go.
Just 100? Like, at that point, just rent their tux for them. Just be like, hey, I got you on the suit. Also, pro suit. Like, just like, if we're going to do this, I'd rather, like, have a piece of clothing I get to wear forever. Pro suit for the groomsmen instead of the tuxedo.
Yeah, just depends. That's up to the groomsmen. That's up to the groom.
Yeah, I'm just saying that would be my personal preference.
Somebody from the 816 said, I asked my groomsmen with Yeti cups, with cigars, golf balls, beef jerky, and a shooter.
Man, that's nice. I've been given, like, bottle openers shaped like baseballs. I've been given cups, like etched glasses, like, you know, groomsmen gifts. I've been given a flask, all kinds. They're always just assuming you want to get drunk. Glasses.
Evidently.
Not me in particular. I think it's just everyone. I don't think it's just related to me. I think in general, that was the way everyone said that, so.
That video is really cool, by the way.
Of course it is. It's an awesome gift. I don't know what it would cost to have custom cards made. graded by PSA.
But Bobby, I mean,
it's probably outside. He could probably just text to do
PSA. I was going to say, they've got connections with whether it's Topps or also PSA. I mean, Bobby's also done the thing where him and like two or three other big leaguers this year or last year had cards they put in their pocket while they played. And then Panini made like they became like a collector item. Like it was intentional. They were the first ever essentially like,
I can't remember. Game played card.
You hear game worn patch.
Or
game
you see
played.
Them like take a piece of jersey off.
Well, that's pretty common.
But it was just a card.
Yeah, which was definitely a unique circumstance. So I'm sure he's got a relationship with that. That is the random question of the day. Up next, we get to the 1 o'clock hour. Let's talk a little bit more about how this season could shape the way we think Patrick Mahomes of ultimately goes down in history. And Drew brought some attention to one thing that was said out in Boston about basketball, and one thing that we haven't seen in a while. And I was pretty stunned to hear it, but we'll bring that to you next.